Daniel, good afternoon to you, and thank you for being with us again.
Well, pleasure, and thank you very much.
No, well, it's absolutely genuine, let me tell you. So one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you, I think to a certain extent, I think we're all coronavirused out, but it seems to me that something perhaps more significant is afoot in terms of globalization. And yeah, I'm very interested in your take on current events, and is this going to signify a longer change for the world, or are we going to go back to normal in a couple of weeks' time?
Yeah, thank you. Look, I think it's a good question. I actually think we've seen obviously a pullback from that sort of crude globalization that we've been speaking about for the last decade or so already happened before coronavirus, BC, as I like to call it now. And we saw that in the course of the last few years under the Trump presidency, when the notion of siphoning off jobs, outsourcing jobs to China became a something of a swear word in U.S. politics. The idea was to bring the jobs back home. And we saw the trade spat last year between the U.S. and China cause trade numbers to drop quite significantly. So that was sort of a forerunner of a plateau in globalization. Now, as you've correctly said, with the coronavirus, I think a number of companies who are concerned about their supply chain of products are going to possibly be looking at finding manufacturers outside of China so that they don't put all of their eggs in one basket. And we in South Africa certainly could very well say to some of our companies, hey, we've got underutilization of our factories here in this country. You know, why don't we manufacture more stuff locally rather than import from outside? So I think that, you know, to answer your question, it's been a sort of a slow but sure movement away from the globalization, and the coronavirus has probably exacerbated it to some degree.
So apparently one of the effects has been so many more people working from home, and a whole lot of companies apparently have found out, hey, wait a minute, this actually kind of works for us. I mean, is this going to change the way we work?
Well, look, I think it obviously depends on the nature of the virus and whether the virus is contained. We all thought, again, 10 years ago, that there would be a lot more remote working as it happens. And we seem to see the world fall back into a position of offices and commuting and going to work. I think clearly we're more technologically advanced to be able to work remotely. Our data speeds are greatly improved, and with 5G, you know, everything will be much easier to do from a home base. But I think this is temporary, and I think the talk about the virus and the concerns are obviously making many more stay at home. And if you look at the lockdown in Italy now, 60 million people under lockdown, there'll be a lot of remote working or home working. In the end, I think some of this might well become more permanent, but some of it will probably fall back into its old ways, hopefully, once this particular virus scare abates.
Yeah, I must say, I've seen like ludicrous things. I've seen airlines who are flying empty planes to keep slots, and just looks like we don't even have the tools to know how to deal with this crisis. I mean, this is an opportunity to turn something bad into something good, and instead we're carrying on to pollute the planet and fly planes to keep slots, and it just seems kind of crazy.
Well, you know, commerce and industry, I suppose, in a sense, has to protect itself going forward. Companies have to protect themselves as well. The slot story is particular to the airline industry, where these slots are incredibly valuable and sell for huge amounts of money, and airlines that already are in financial distress certainly don't want to lose them. So, you know, flying an empty plane becomes preferable to actually not using them. But, you know, this is what we need to assess from a business point of view now in this coronavirus environment. We all have to be a lot more flexible with rules and regulations. And we're going to see companies demanding of governments, the regulators themselves,
yes.
A much more laissez-faire approach. And the slot story is a prime example of that. So there's a certain adaptation here in which governments and the regulatory environment is going to also have to protect business under these conditions. And there's going to be a demand from business. There will also be some pushback from governments and the regulators. And this probably will be an ongoing battle as this crisis unfolds.
Am I completely out of my mind to see a swing in power back to the consumer through all this? And I'll just give you an example of, for example, the plastic straws. I don't think the makers of plastic straws were particularly keen to stop producing them, but they responded to outrage by consumers. Is this not going to cause the same sort of response vis-a-vis flying empty planes and polluting a planet or the ability to work from home? Is that not possibly a dynamic that we are going to see emerge following this virus?
Look, I think there is a dynamic in the world, certainly an environmentally conscious dynamic that has certainly pressured many citizens across the world to really review the way they conduct their daily business. And I think we all, in a sense, are adjusting to that pressure and understanding the importance of the planet as well. And the plastic bag story is just one example of how we've all now adapted to paying for a plastic bag and taking reusable bags. That's changed our habits.
Sure.
So we're in a constant process of evolving, and the coronavirus story actually also simply allows us to evolve and change our habits even further. You know, I'm in the business of giving presentations to audiences, not at my home, but physically all over the country and elsewhere. You know, we all now have to look at virtual appearances, online appearances, as opposed to, frankly, having to fly around the country all the time, which probably we don't need. But, you know, the assessment, I think, of all of this will change some habits, but I expect that for most of us, we will continue to some degree in our old way with some tweaks across the board. And those tweaks will help, broadly speaking, the planet. And of course, emissions, carbon footprint, and all the rest of it.
That does make a whole bunch of sense, because I suppose human nature is human nature. Now, talking human nature, this culling, this absolute bloodbath that happened on the stock markets world over in the past couple of days, was it warranted in your opinion?
Well, there's human nature at work. As we know, markets are influenced by two great emotions, fear and greed. And we've seen greed apply to the markets over the last few years, going up and up and up in the expectation that you just make more and more. And in the last 2 days, we saw fear, fear, and fear. You know, the base human emotions come out when discussing the markets. Look, I think that we saw a number of factors all come together at once. And in fact, I'm doing a presentation on this tomorrow. So, you know, it's very much in my mind. You know, the global economy, you know, was approaching a sort of a fragile level even before the coronavirus, BC. Yes. It didn't need that much to tip it over. And of course, with the uncertainty and unknown position relating to the virus and the spread of the virus, that clearly was a factor compounded in the last 36 hours by an oil spat between Saudi Arabia and Saudi Arabia, you know, which is again set back the market substantially. And I think those two factors, together with the uncertainty level, really pushed sentiment over the edge. You know, are we going to see some recovery? Well, if the oil spat is alleviated in some way, if OPEC or at least the Saudis and the Russians can find a middle ground in oil production, then we can see some modicum of improvement. If the cases, if the new virus infections start to slip or start to be reduced, as we've started to see in China, if they start to show signs of control in Italy and perhaps in other parts of Europe as well, but particularly Italy because it's the main country involved at the moment, then I think we'll see some stabilization. So all of these factors together are creating almost a perfect storm for the market. You know, I think that, you know, we probably will see stabilization. I know there's a sort of a fear index as well that looks as though it's reaching a plateau. So, you know, I wish I knew the answers to these questions.
I'm angry, Daniel. I'm angry. I'm angry because people's lives are being affected. People who are going on pension during this period are going to be severely, severely disadvantaged. And for what? For fear of a fund manager who felt he needed to bail out of a stock as quickly as possible. This has real life impacts on a whole bunch of people. And one wonders, you know, is this just an algorithm that's just working in the background that says sell, sell, sell? Or are these people being utterly irresponsible?
Well, I think, you know, if you have a responsible fund manager, the fund manager, if the fund manager came on your show this afternoon, the fund manager would say, look, this is something that, you know, we need to sit out. We've been through these down times before. And we hope that, the fundamentals are more or less intact to enable some sort of recovery to emerge, not immediately, but hopefully later in the year. So the notion that somebody is, somebody who is on the cusp of retirement has suddenly seen their fund manager sell over the course of the last while probably is not necessarily correct. But of course, for your person going on retirement this week, who requires their pension money paid out this week, that's the worst possible timing altogether. And of course, if you rely upon the market to prop up your pension money, you know you have a degree of risk built into that. And all of us, to some degree, whether we invest privately in the market, whether we have a pension scheme that does, whether we're part of Eskom's pension scheme, all of us, the Communist Party of South Africa, have a pension scheme that invests on the JSE. All of us are in some way vulnerable to market fluctuations. I suppose we know from the get-go, we can't blame the market when it goes down, but it's really, really bad timing if you need that cash today.
No, 100%. Daniel, in the very short time that's left, I'm going to go off on a tangent very quickly and ask you, what on earth caused that so-called spat between Russia and Saudi Arabia that caused the oil price to just disintegrate?
Look, I think what we saw there was those two oil superpowers trying to play a game of who's in control of the oil market. Of course, what one doesn't quite know is why yesterday was chosen as the day to exacerbate all of this amidst a broader global downturn.
Interesting.
But I think what we're seeing here is an attempt to control the market and to a degree to control price. The Saudis clearly felt that they would be prepared to pump oil onto the market in order to gain a degree of control over the supply globally and, of course, put Russia, therefore, on the back foot. And therefore, the Saudis were prepared in their announcement in the amount of barrels per oil pumped per day, what probably will be a global recession. So we really saw a double whammy there. It was unnecessary to have power in the world on the same day.
Thank you for your insights, and thank you for speaking to us on Chai FM. I'm really, really, really glad that you speak to us on a regular basis.